All right, everyone, welcome back to the Rockcast. Jordan here, and we're at the 2020 Expo, Western Hunt Expo in Salt Lake City, and I have with me James Nash.
Hello.
And we're just going to talk about stuff.
I don't
really know. I've known you for a couple years.
Right.
Yeah, I was going to go out and guide with you, and then it got really busy and crazy. And
I'm still going to convince you to come guide for me at some point.
I know, we should. It'd be a blast. Now we're both on the SIG ambassador team.
Yeah.
And they have a new cross rifle coming out, and I know that, I'm pretty sure they got Ryan Avery one, that he's been shooting and going to do a review on, I think, but I've had a prototype a couple of different times, and then you've shot it quite a bit too. I'm sure you've shot it more than I have.
Yeah, I got to hunt with it in 3 states last year, and then ended up having to send it back so that they could do a hunt with it in New England.
Mm-hmm.
But I got to let some of my clients hunt with it as well. And I feel like, you know, as an outfitter, I can make lots of guns work, but can I get one gun that works for me and works for a bunch of my clients? That's a real challenge.
Yeah. And just the adjustability on it. And it's, you know, I was actually just reading a thing about 5 minutes ago that somebody was saying, you know, it's really not a chassis rifle, and it's like a hybrid. I mean, it's really not, but
it's not even a hybrid. And I think we've gotten used to the idea that as soon as you see a pistol grip on a bolt action rifle, that it's a chassis system. And I think that a lot of people don't necessarily know what a chassis means. So basically, you know, for those who don't know or wondered about it, a chassis is a barrel going into a receiver, and then that receiver being embedded, usually in metal. But with the cross, the receiver is one piece of metal that's machined out of aluminum, and then the barrel goes into that.
Okay.
And the way the barrel goes in is it's pre-head spaced with a jam nut, and then it's held in place with a barrel nut, similar to some of the Savages you've seen or an AR-15.
Okay.
So it is actually an AR-15 barrel nut, so you'd use that same wrench. And you can actually change barrels out at home and change calibers, honestly, just about as easily as you can change a scope.
Man, yeah. I like it a lot, but it does look like that chassis, but like folding stock, and then the adjustability of it is something I really like. So you could adjust it, like the cheek piece and everything. You could adjust it to you, and then I could adjust it to me, and then we could adjust it to little Jordan, and she would fit into it just fine.
Yeah, totally. And you can adjust it without tools, which is great. So adjustability in the field. And there's some adjustments that we're not used to seeing, like being able to slide the butt pad up and down.
Yeah.
So if you're shooting steep uphill versus downhill, being able to, you know, really quickly move that butt pad is huge. And that's going to be a big way to help you manage the recoil, keep a scope out of your forehead, things like that.
Yeah. So it's going to be offered in the 277 SIG Fury, and that's their new round.
Right.
And then 6.5 Creedmoor and 308.
Yes.
I think. Yeah.
And that's going to be the initial offering.
Gotcha.
So there will be more barrel options that are available. You'll be able to do anything that's within that same bolt face, so that 308 family of bolt faces.
Nice. And then we've both been shooting it with the BDX, the SIG BDX on top of it. And I know you talked about you really like it for clients because you can just, they can just hold. You can range and they can hold, and it's quick.
Especially with new shooters, a lot of times they have a hard time with confidence getting ready to break that shot. If it's their first animal or whatever, you know, whatever anxiety they have. And during that time that they're making their mind up, that animal might move another 100 yards, 50 yards, whatever. If you have to say, hey, you know, reach up and give it another 0.7 mils of scope, or, you know, hold another 8 inches higher, now they're trying to figure out what 8 inches looks like at 400 yards. Like that, you're just adding to the anxiety. If you say, put the orange dot on the brown thing and pull on the trigger, it's like, now we made it simple. We made life easier. We made harvesting this animal a more ethical experience because you're more precise in doing so.
Yeah, for sure. For suppressors, which different ones have you used?
I don't have a ton of experience with suppressors. I've used the 10 baffle titanium suppressor from SIG. And then I have a Coastal can that I've owned for years that weighs almost 4 pounds, and it's just a beast, you know. It gets the job done, but it changes barrel harmonics in a really significant way. It doesn't change accuracy, but it definitely will change your point of impact.
Gotcha. So yeah, I definitely wanted to touch on that cross because there's been a lot of questions on it, I guess. Like, it's been a big release, and I know that when I talked to one of the other guys from SIG, they were talking about how they got like over double the orders on it that they thought they were going to.
Yeah, it's been really, really well received. And some of the folks at SIG were nervous about that because they're so strong in military and law enforcement and the tactical community. They weren't sure how they were going to be perceived by the hunting community.
Yeah.
But the hunting community has been really welcoming and honored SIG's success in that other arena. So, you know, this cross rifle with a match grade trigger and the accuracy that we're getting out of this barrel and just the rigidity and reliability of the whole system, plus the modularity aspect of being able to get it to fit anybody. It's just a neat thing. Like, my other guns that shoot like this weigh 22 pounds.
Yeah.
You know, they cost $5,000. This thing's $1,499.
Yeah.
It's almost upsetting to me because I've spent so much money on other custom guns. Like, I could have just bought this. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. So you also have SIG Ranch Outfitters.
Yes.
Yep.
Yep. So I have a family cattle ranch similar to you. I've been there. I'm the fifth generation of my family to live there and raise cattle. And we have a nice section of river that goes through there, and we do fly fishing. And then I guide hunters all over the place. And yeah, it's a good life.
Yeah, super awesome. So that's kind of the next thing I wanted to talk to you about is, so with hunters, like, we get a variety of clients. Like, there's a really hard, you know, the hardcore guys that have done a lot of hunts, and they're pretty dialed and everything, but then there's kind of the newer person coming out west.
Yep.
Can you talk about maybe some of the gaps that you've seen?
Sure.
In, you know, in gear, just maybe misperceptions too?
I think, you know, some of the big mistakes that people make is they for whatever reason, they don't ask me questions about what they need in terms of gear or what they need in terms of preparation. And they might have a lot of faith in their local bow shop in, you know, Mississippi, and that shop might be really good for servicing them in that area.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't really prepare them for doing an elk hunt in Oregon or Montana or Idaho.
Yeah.
So, you know, I really wish that they would talk to me a little bit and be like, hey, what do you think I should be shooting?
Mm-hmm.
What's an appropriate grain weight for my arrow? I would be so thrilled if a client said, how many grains should my arrow be? Like, I'd be out of my mind excited. But, you know, people, they also tend to want to impress guides. For me, I'm more impressed with humility than I am with false confidence. So don't tell me that you can shoot 60 yards if you haven't.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can look at your pins and tell you that your 30, 40, and 50 are still on the factory setting. So let's just work with where you're at.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what I'm impressed by, somebody that knows what they're currently capable of and is looking to improve it. And I'm there to help.
Yeah, that's awesome. We have guys shoot before they go out and hunt, and I'm sure you guys probably do the same thing. It gets interesting a little bit.
Yeah, I've noticed an interesting thing over the last couple of years. A lot of my clients show up in an afternoon, and some of them get there early enough that they can unload their stuff, shoot, and then potentially go out and hunt that evening.
Yeah.
But what I've found is after a day of travel, they shoot like hell, and it's just terrible. And then that first night, even if they get an opportunity, they don't want to shoot because they just had a really bad performance on the target range.
Yeah.
Then they'll go out for a hunt the next morning and come back in and shoot again, and they'll shoot lights out. So I think the guys are really tired, and they're just fatigued from travel. They're mentally fatigued. They have nervousness about being, you know, starting out this hunt, and they just shoot like crap. So I've started to try to move away from getting people to shoot in, you know, just as quick as they get to the lodge or whatever, because I think that it ruins their confidence, and I know that they're not going to perform well.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's a really good point, actually. So what arrow weight do you recommend after seeing so many elk get shot? What seems to kind of have the least amount of non-recoveries?
I've noticed more difference in the type of broadhead than I have an actual arrow weight.
Really?
But I want to see an arrow weight for elk that's at least 525 grains at a bare minimum. I'm really happy with 650 grains, anywhere between 6 and 650. And people will sometimes say, well, I'm only pulling 60 pounds or I'm only pulling 55 pounds. But if you look at the traditional archers that are all pulling that amount, they're basically all going to a 650 grain arrow or heavier.
Yeah.
So I would say that the arrow weight is even more important on a lighter draw weight or a shorter draw length. What's really important to me is a single bevel, single blade broadhead. So in 2018, I think we killed 15 or 16 bulls. We had 100% pass-throughs on our single bevel broadheads, and we had 100% not pass-throughs on everything else.
Really?
And we've continued to see that trend. So I still have not had a client shoot a bull with a single bevel, single blade broadhead that didn't get a complete pass-through at any range. And some of these arrows that are touted and broadheads that are touted for really good penetration, like mm-hmm. Valkyrie, for example, we had a Valkyrie end up in a shoulder blade and, you know, penetrate like an inch and a half. And I had that bull on camera 3 days later with that broadhead sticking out.
Oh, man.
And that was with an 80-pound bow at 45 yards. I was like, man, that should not have happened. But mm-hmm. I really don't like three blades. I'd rather see a four blade than a three blade.
Okay.
Because a four blade is cutting in two directions, and a three blade is cutting in three directions and tends to create tension on itself when it's traveling through tough tissue like mm-hmm. bone and cartilage. But those single bevels, man, they just burn through them. They don't bleed a lot, but I can also say that if I see a lot of blood coming out of an elk and it's not dead like within 10 feet, mm-hmm. it's a bad sign. Their chest cavity can hold every drop of blood in their body, and on these good shots, they just go 70 yards and die and no blood comes out of them.
Yeah. So on some shots that you've seen, you know, if you get like a mid-center punch,
like liver.
Yeah. What's kind of your, so like for a liver hit and for a gut shot hit, and then let's say like maybe like a low brisket, like a muscle hit, is like your standard protocol?
It's always difficult to try and piece back together from the shooter exactly what happened.
Yeah.
And me as a shooter, I don't even try to tell people what I think happened anymore. Like, I blacked out. Yeah. I don't know. Like, I hoped that somebody else was paying attention. Mm-hmm. And I just know that about myself. And if I think that I know something, it's probably diluted with what I wanted to happen. I have seen some brisket shots. And what typically happens with that elk is he goes about 150 yards and beds down, and there will be a little pool of blood about the size of a dinner plate, and it's fairly dark. And then he'll jump up out of that bed at some point for whatever reason, and he'll never bleed again.
Oh, man.
And that's just the end of him. And I don't ever say, well, that elk lives. I don't mm-hmm. do that, because there's things like infection. Who knows what actually happens with that animal? So yeah. I'm not a veterinarian. I'm not going to mm-hmm. make a judgment in the field about whether that animal lives or not. For my money, if I'm making it bleed, I punch a tag.
Yeah.
Like, that's just the end of it. Africa rules. But that's what I see on a brisket shot. With liver shots, I often see animals bed down in that 300 to 400 yard range. If it's a sure enough liver shot, it's going to die right there if it hasn't been pushed.
Okay.
And then with a gut shot, if it's like a sure enough paunch green arrow gut shot, I've never recovered an elk that's been shot like that with an arrow.
Ooh, really?
No, yeah. I never have. And I've spent some days of my life looking for them.
Yeah.
Like many, many days.
Many days, yeah.
It's only happened on one bull. But I've probably got like 15 days into looking for him at this point, spread out over a couple of years, because I really want to find him.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think on, you tend to go a little bit lighter on arrow weights. What are your thoughts on it?
I'm at like 480.
Yep.
So a little bit lighter. So far for me, it's just seemed like a good compromise of like performance and some speed. And my deal isn't so much the speed, it's just my pin gap.
Right.
Like I like shooting. I don't want to say I like shooting the farther shots, but I don't, I guess, shy away from them.
Yep.
You know, I shot my bull in 2018. I shot him at 70 yards and got a complete pass through. Went like tucked it in right behind his. He was a little bit quartered away, but tucked it in right behind his front shoulder, and it came out his neck right here.
Nice.
And it was full pass through there, and then the same. That same year, 2018 in Arizona, I shot a bull at 30 and got a passer. But that was something interesting, too, is I shot him double lung. He was at 30 yards, and I got a pass through, but the arrow didn't come out the other side. It just punched through.
Right.
So I guess maybe it wasn't pass through, but yeah. He punched through. And then I shot a deer before that in 2017 at, like, 65, and I punched through both shoulder blades. So it's just kind of... I don't know. It seems to have just been my sweet spot, but I haven't lost one yet with that setup. So
Yeah. You know, the way I think about it is really that you can get away with a light arrow, with an inferior broadhead on a perfect shot.
Yeah.
But if something goes wrong, which, you know, in my life often does, then I want penetration to be on my side. And that's why I lean towards the heavier arrow, the higher FOC, and then, you know, these broadheads that are built more so for penetration than they are for cutting diameter. And the way I think about cutting diameter as well is about the total surface area cut as if it were a two-dimensional plane. So if I have a 1 1/8-inch broadhead and it cuts 3 inches deeper into the body, that counts for a lot more than a 1 1/4-inch broadhead that didn't cut as far, just in total terms of actual cutting that has occurred. And that's similar to what I actually experience in the real world with ballistic gelatins and shooting through bags of beef bones and stuff like that. So just the deeper you can go, the more you're going to cut.
What would you recommend for a broadhead? Like, you know, specifically some of those newer ones like Iron Will and...
The broadhead I'm using right now is a Cayuga out of Australia.
Okay.
And they are 48 Rockwell hardness, single bevel, single piece of steel. So it's a forged broadhead.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no ferrule that can break. That's what I've seen in some of the American-made broadheads is the ferrules break where the screw goes through the ferrule to hold the blade
okay.
in.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So with a single piece of metal there, it's a lot sturdier. And then what would be the ferrule on that broadhead goes all the way to the tip of the head. So the aspect angle, the aspect ratio is really good. So it actually creates a wedge there for breaking bone rather than having sort of that speed ramp that some of these others like the Helix have. You know, you have that blade and then it hits the ferrule and kind of has a bump right there. So that's kind of a tough thing for that arrow to keep driving through. Also, the Cayugas are super cheap. You get a 6-pack of them. Right now, the dollar's super strong, so and one American dollar is worth $1.50 in Australia. So you can get a 6-pack of them for like $55 or something. And like the last time I shot Helix, my broadheads were $33 a piece. So it's like, and they're good boys down there in Australia. They hunt all year long. And they're hunting for these big, hairy, muddy animals, and they need their broadhead to work more than once.
Yeah.
And that's where I'm at, too. Like, I want to get multiple uses out of a broadhead, too.
Yeah. Well, especially when you're paying.
Yeah. Yeah.
A little
for
bit
sure.
Different.
But, you know, the point I make about broadheads is, like, that's the most important part of your system. Like, you have this $30,000 truck that you drive to the trailhead, and then you put on your $300 boots that you hike in, and your $600 pack that carries all your stuff, and your $1,000 bow, and all this stuff. Every single aspect of your kit is built to get a date between lungs and broadhead. So, like, don't fail at this last point. Like, put as much effort and research and commitment into this one piece of gear as possible. And I feel the same way about bullets. So, you know, people really focus on external ballistics with bullets. So they're thinking about ballistic coefficient, about muzzle velocity, and they really don't focus that much on terminal ballistics. And when you try and talk with them about it, they say, well, it's all shot placement. Like, yes, it is all shot placement. But sometimes some of you folks miss. Yeah. I've seen you do it. Yeah. So then what? What if your shot placement isn't just right? Now you need a bullet to perform better than ever.
Right.
So terminal ballistics are extraordinarily important.
We've had some guys come in that, you know, they have brand new bows, right? But they have literally like Walmart arrows.
Right.
There's not a connection there. And a lot of it too, honestly, are like the rock cast. Most of everybody who listens to it, I think they're pretty up on trying to like get the best arrow that they can and like the best setup. And I think,
yeah, I mean, you get guys that show up and you say, well, what's your arrow weigh? And they say 340. That's your spine.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's your spine.
So here's a scale. Yeah. Oh, look, it's also 340. Yeah. You lucked out. That's not heavy enough.
Yeah.
Like, what are we going to do?
Uh-huh.
So.
Yeah. Dude, it's interesting. What, for somebody coming out west, what do you recommend them to, like, focus on the most?
I think shooting ability is really important. I think mental toughness is important. I think having a really clear goal of what would make you happy on the hunt is the most important thing of all. And then being able to communicate that with your guide. Like when I pick up fishing clients, when we're in the parking lot, I say, how would you define success today? And some people will say, I would like to catch a 30-inch rainbow. And I can squash that bug right there because I don't have any of those.
Yeah.
Some people say, well, I just want to catch a bunch of fish. Okay, that's going to change which flies I put on. I want to catch the biggest fish out there. That's going to change things. Some people will say, you know what? I really just want to learn how to cast better. Like, cool. If I didn't know that, I'd be out there trying to guess what you wanted, and we wouldn't have worked on casting at all because I probably would have guessed that you just wanted to catch fish.
Yeah.
So I think people being honest with themselves about what they want, what's going to make them happy, is really important. And I'm a firm believer that you don't pass on the first day what you would kill on the last day.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you would shoot a spike on the last day of the hunt and it's legal and he steps out on the first day and you get a good shot, you kill spike.
Man, well, you don't know what can change. Like the next day, the weather could totally tank. And we had a little deal in November where we did have some weather come in right after like a super awesome evening. And we had some weather come in. And I think a lot of the deer were kind of on lockdown, and it wasn't the same as it'd been. And it took it a little while. It took it 3-4 days to come out of it. And then we were kind of back on track. But, you just never know what's going to change. So yeah,
it is tough. So, you know, just be honest with yourself and take opportunities as they're presented. And if you're cool with eating your tag, then that's cool with me.
Mm-hmm.
Just let's be honest and drive everything we do towards your version of success.
Right. Yeah. Gear wise, what do you think people lack coming from east to west? Like one thing we see a lot with, our guys is like binoculars.
Yeah. Boots.
Just optics. Yeah. Boots.
A lot of guys will either show up in like rubber boots, like they're about to hoof it into a tree stand, or they'll show up in brand new Kennetrax that are going to tear their feet apart.
Yeah.
I see a lot of archery hunters showing up in stiff-shanked mountain boots where we're not climbing mountains. And there's a time and a place to be noisy around elk, but it's got to be the right kind of noisy. And trying to be sneaky in Kennetrax is freaking impossible.
Yeah.
They are so loud. And I'm not just picking on Kennetrax, mm-hmm. like any of those stiff shanked, you know, rubber ran mountain boots that all of us like, they're really loud.
Mm-hmm.
And if I have a bull that's hung up in a thicket at 100 yards and I need you to go 40 yards forward and I'm going to stay here and keep calling, you can't make any sound in that 40 yards. And you can't take your boots off because he might bust and we have to go another half mile after him.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole like slip into your socks thing is almost like a cutesy Nevada mule deer.
It's like a mule deer thing.
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. Every time I've taken my boots off on elk, I've ended up having to go like miles back to find my boots at the end of the day because elk just take you places.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that. Anything else you can think of?
No, I mean, I like to tell people on these podcasts that if they have questions about any aspect of hunting, about anything that they feel like I can provide them information-wise, mm-hmm. I'm an open resource to anybody. So you can find me on Instagram and write me, and I write everybody back. So I take my time to provide you with the resources that I can. And if I can't answer your question, I'll try and find somebody who can.
Gotcha. Dude, that's awesome. Thanks a ton for hopping on. I know that you did a video, Loophole did a video with you a while back. And so I'll attach that to the podcast so then people can watch it and get a little better sense of who you are.
Nice.
But yeah, man. Appreciate it. Hopefully we'll be going to Australia in July.
Yeah, shooting them buffaloes.
Yeah, water buffalo, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's going to be crazy. What are you going to shoot it with?
That will be a to-be-determined SIG rifle.
Okay.
Yeah.
Copy that.
Yeah.
All right, man. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.